In 2014 and 2015, Washington's prison system experienced a spike in inmate suicides. During those 2 years, 11 inmate deaths were ruled suicide, giving Washington one of the highest prison suicide rates in the country. Olympia correspondent Austin Jenkins has spent the past year investigating how this happened and how the prison system responded. In part one of his series, Suicide Behind Bars, Austin takes us inside one prison. A warning, this story includes descriptions of suicides.
This is what it sounds like when there's a suicide in prison. You're hearing two-way radio traffic from the Washington Corrections Center on the morning of October 16th, 2014. An inmate named Nicholas White had been found hanging in his two-man cell. It was the 31-year-old's second time behind bars. There's an urgency in the voices of the prison staff, and there is tension.
I've got the security key. Go pick up medical staff, north end of the infirmary. Bring them to R2.
That morning had started out routinely. Surveillance video shows shirtless inmates playing basketball in a gym. You can hear the idle chatter of correctional officers in an office off the gym. They talk about how the microphone on the camera will burn them someday. You can actually hear them say that. Then White's cellmate stops by, and you can hear his voice on the videotape too.
I'm an A4. Lower. My cellmate's name is Nicholas White.
The cellmate tells a sergeant that White has been acting paranoid and talking about killing himself.
This morning, like with Vince, sorry, he's trying to tie his little sheet up there to see if he'll stay.
Cool. Okay. Have a good day.
About 15 minutes elapses from when the cellmate alerts the staff to when the call for help goes out over the radio.
Oh, go take care of that. Go. Hey, that dude. Hey.
Even as the emergency response begins, everything else goes on as normal. The basketball game continues. The inmates in the gym have no idea one of their own is hanging in a nearby cell.
CPR in progress. CC base, CPR in progress.
WCC base received, CPR in progress, 1003.
At 10:20 a.m., a prison doctor declares White dead. In the office where the video is running, someone in the office announces, "The dude is dead." A handheld video from that day shows the ambulance crew leaving. White's body remains on the floor outside of his cell. A correctional officer walks up and places a white sheet over the body. Someone is heard saying, "It's an unfortunate day." White was the fifth Washington prison inmate to die by suicide in 2014. In a normal year, two, maybe three inmates would take their own lives. This spike set off alarm bells within the Department of Corrections, but not immediately.
We started seeing an increase, and I would say at around the fourth suicide, we started to become concerned. It was different than previous years.
This is Dr. Carrie Rayner, who directs mental health services for the Washington Department of Corrections. Rayner says up until this point, she and her team had been viewing these suicides in isolation. Now, they started to look for patterns, for commonalities.
While we were looking at that, then of course we continued to have suicides that were completed, which just further raised our concerns, and we were taking a closer look.
After Nicholas White, there was one more suicide in 2014, and then in 2015, five more inmates took their own lives. If there was a pattern to these deaths, it wasn't easily detectable. The victims were housed in different prisons. They were different ages. They'd committed different crimes. Some were serving long sentences. Others were about to get out. Some had known mental health issues. Others weren't on anyone's radar. So who were these men? The first was Richard Billings Jr., age 38. He was found hanging in his cell at the Stafford Creek Correction Center near Aberdeen just after 3 one morning. Billings was serving a 12-year sentence for child molestation. He had a history of suicide attempts throughout his life. Just prior to his death, he'd been taken off suicide watch at the prison and moved to a single cell. His therapist later told investigators that Billings should not have been placed in a single cell given his suicidal tendencies. The next was Tony Willoughby, age 48. He hanged himself at the Airway Heights prison near Spokane in April. Willoughby was serving life without parole for murdering an 87-year-old woman. He'd been in prison for nearly three decades. The following month, in the same prison, Morgan Bluehorse, age 29, was discovered hanging by a sheet from the sprinkler head protection cage in his isolation cell. He was serving 15 years for a string of burglaries, and he too had a history of suicide attempts dating back to his childhood. In August, also at Airway Heights, Chance Kidder, age 19, hanged himself from the sprinkler head protection cage in his isolation cell. Kidder was nearing the end of his 14-month sentence for auto theft. Then it was Nicholas White at the Washington Correction Center, the inmate who was found shortly after his cellmate alerted staff. It turns out White had tried to get help. An investigation revealed that 3 days before his death, he had asked to see a mental health counselor. The next day, he submitted another request and said he wanted to get back on his medications ASAP. The day of his death, White had an appointment to see a counselor, but it appears no one let him know the appointment had been set up. The sixth and final suicide of that year was also at the Washington Correction Center. Keith Neal, age 43, was serving a 35-year sentence for multiple counts of child rape. The night before his death, Neal was honored by prison volunteers for his work as a teaching assistant in the education department at the prison.
It's R2. WCCMS received R2.
After each of these suicides, the Washington Department of Corrections conducted what's called a critical incident review. This is basically an investigation into what happened and whether policies were followed. The review includes timelines, interviews with staff, and it concludes with recommendations and lessons learned. But despite these reviews, the suicides didn't stop. The first 3 months of 2015 brought three more suicides. In January, Oscar Garcia Pacheco, age 34. In February, 23-year-old Nathan Bennett. In March, Jason Williams. He was 41. It was around this time that top staff at the Washington Department of Corrections decided they needed to ask for some help. That's when then-Corrections Secretary Bernie Werner picked up the phone and called Lindsay Hayes.
I've worked in the field of suicide prevention in correctional facilities for more than 35 years.
Hayes is with the Baltimore-based National Center on Institutions and Alternatives. He's viewed as one of the nation's preeminent experts on jail and prison suicide, and he agreed to come out to Washington.
So that was my task going forth, and I went out there and spent 4 days on site and went to four different prisons.
Washington has nearly 17,000 inmates housed in 12 different prisons, from Clallam Bay on the northwest coast to the state penitentiary at Walla Walla to the women's prison at Purdy. After his visit, Hayes wrote a 47-page report. We'll hear more about his findings later. But for now, consider this statistic found on page 4. During a three-year period ending in June of 2015, Washington prisons had a suicide rate of nearly 24 deaths per 100,000 inmates. That is much higher than the average suicide rate in prisons, and nearly double the rate of suicide outside of prison. If you think about it, suicide should be less of a problem in prison because many of the means have already been removed. For instance, there's no access to guns, the leading method of suicide in the U.S. And yet, suicide is an ever-lurking danger in prisons. The inmates are locked up and deprived of social support systems. Many have an underlying mental health condition or have experienced childhood trauma, or both.
This is a global telllink collect call from an inmate at Monroe Correctional Complex.
Consider the case of Daniel J. Perez.
I'm 30 years old, and I'm at Monroe Correctional Complex Special Offenders Unit.
The Special Offender Unit is for inmates with serious mental health issues. Perez says his diagnosis is schizoaffective disorder and PTSD. He has a history of self-harm and suicide attempts. Perez first went to prison at age 18 for vehicular homicide. In prison, he says he became paranoid and violent. Less than a year into his sentence, he murdered his cellmate, strangled him to death. Perez spent the next nearly 3 years in solitary confinement, locked down 23 hours a day. He was getting mental health treatment during this time, but even so, he says the isolation took a toll.
And that's when my self-harm and suicidal ideations came that.
In 2009, Perez was moved out of isolation and into the special offender unit at Monroe. But a few months later, he attempted to murder another fellow inmate. Once again, he was put back into solitary confinement, this time for 5 more years. 2 years into this stint in isolation, he attempted suicide.
So I ripped up a sheet, made a ligature, and wrapped it around my neck so tight that I lost consciousness.
Perez woke up in the hospital. He had been saved by prison staff who performed CPR on him for about 30 minutes. Perez says he attempted suicide because of the isolation.
The walls close in on you. They collapse on you. You feel detached. It's an overwhelming feeling of anxiety, depression, and paranoia.
Prison suicide expert Lindsay Hayes estimates that only 10, maybe 20% of prison inmates are in segregation at any given time. But he says they represent 30 to 40%, maybe more, of the suicides. In Washington, 4 of the inmates who completed suicide in 2014 and 2015 were in segregation at the time of their deaths, and at least 6 of the 11 had done time in segregation. While studies have shown that segregation can be psychologically damaging, it's also supposed to be physically safe. Chance Kidder, a 19-year-old inmate who hanged himself in a segregation cell at Airway Heights, wasn't safe. Tomorrow, in part 2, you'll hear the story of a young inmate who grew up as a foster kid in Central Washington, got in trouble with the law, and died by suicide in a segregation cell just days before his release. That's tomorrow in part 2. I'm Austin Jenkins, reporting.